Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's show is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, sharing nothing but the best in whole grain nutrition and committed to their mission of good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Greetings and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher. I'm also known as the Food Healer, and it's nice to be back after a couple week break. So new season, new topics, new shows. I'm really excited about it. Today's guest is Nancy Hassel, who's founder and president of the American Pet Professionals, and she's got a really cool job, and so I'm really excited to share it with you guys. So we're just going to get started. Nancy, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm really excited to find out what you do, and, you know, it's the pet industry is so amazing that I'm... Thank you for taking the time to come on here. My brain is going 1,000 miles an hour right now. I want to ask you 600,000 things. So
go for it.
Thank you. So let's start off with simple, well, sort of simple question. Can you tell us about American Pet Professionals?
Sure. American Pet Professionals is a business networking and educational organization for the pet industry that I started back in February of 2009. We used to be hyper-local where we were just on Long Island, but expanded, started having members all across the country about a year and a half in. And we're almost eight and a half years now that we've been doing it. So it's been a lot of fun, a pretty wild ride, and amazing to see so many pet professionals prosper, do well. We have members from all areas of the industry.
Cool.
So whether they're a veterinarian, a pet product manufacturer, retail store owner, dog walker, trainer, and we have a lot of rescue groups as well that are members.
Wow. Wow, that's nice that it's such a broad bunch of people, you know. I wasn't sure if it was just going to be specific, like, hey, I just thought of the new dog ball, and I want you to help me market it, you know. So it's nice to hear it's this gigantic thing.
Yeah, so you know what? I started because I wanted to unite the industry and bring together pet professionals. My background is in television production and trade shows and PR, and I had been to a bazillion networking events, and I would talk about what I did on the side. This was years ago before I started American Pet Professionals, and I would say something about the pet industry or that I helped, you know, teach pet parents about dog responsibility and all of that stuff, and they would all look at me like I had, you know, three heads. So I was like, now they're not, but back then they were. And, you know, so I wanted to start something that I was really more for my peers. And, you know, there's still the struggle of new pet professionals joining the industry that maybe have a hard time figuring out what it is that they want to do or, you know, now maybe they're 5 years in and they're hitting a plateau or just those kind of struggles, and really bring together people because it's not about competition. It's about working together and ultimately helping animals and having fun with our dogs. And that's the best part of it.
I mean, I think that sounds really great because I'm one of these people that goes to trade shows all the time. I haven't been in the past 2 years to like the pet expos and all that. But it's, you know, there's so many new products and there's so many products there and it's so big and it's so overwhelming. But at the end of the day, everyone's trying to improve quality of life for people's animals. And I think that's something really important to keep in mind.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it is all about the animals. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned trade shows because we just had our fifth annual NYC Retail and Sales Pet Expo in New York City last week.
Oh, cool.
Myself and my business partner, Dana Humphrey. And it's a smaller boutique expo We had 18 vendors.
Nice.
And, you know, we have people from all over the country fly in to be vendors. We have people from all over the New York City and tri-state area to come and check out the wares. Pet Age Magazine has been our presenting media sponsor for years. So
nice.
It's really been a collaborative, amazing effort. And we're excited about the next show.
And so do you guys specialize in, like, just dogs and cats, or do you do all animals?
Oh, no. Like, for American Pet Professionals, I have horse rescue members. I have reptile members. The Long Island Parrot Society is members. We've had chinchilla rescue as members.
Wow.
So all animals. Yeah. Fish, everything.
And so what does the organization really do? Like, what does American Pet Professionals do?
Sure. So to date, I've hosted nearly almost over 100 in-person networking events.
Wow.
That, depending on, you know, what the topic is, you name it, we've covered it. From social media to helping people grow their pet businesses. We actually have an event coming up next month or this month in May already. On how to start a pet business, so Pet Industry 101.
Nice.
I've had speakers from inside the industry and outside the industry come and teach pet professionals. You know, I'm always providing them with information, working out with, you know, a lot of people come to me because they want to reach my members, so providing my members with discounted potential, you know, advertising or whatever it is from
cool.
outside sources. So it's all about keeping them informed and keeping them up to date on what's going on, because there's a lot of information out there and not all of it's correct.
Yeah, no kidding, huh? I mean, wow. I mean, I love this idea. I love the idea.
Thank you.
And it's really cool and it's so good because, you know, I've been doing animal nutrition since I was 18. And, you know, as you know, there's no such thing, like, there's no, like, licensed animal nutritionist up to this point, you know? And so I would get a lot of competition in the beginning. Well, in the beginning, everyone thought I was crazy. So, I mean, you know, fair
right.
enough. And then it was like the competition started up and it was the type of thing where it's like, I really wish this wasn't competition, because we could really learn a lot reading each other's notes and having intelligent
Absolutely.
Discourse instead of, you know, instead of 40 people making the same mistake over and over and over, one person
Agreed.
Can do it and report it to everybody else and everyone can go, oh, you know.
I totally agree. And pet nutrition is a huge thing. I've been doing research on pet food and pet nutrition for, I can't even tell you how many years. I spoke about you know, understanding pet food ingredients to retailers at a trade show a few years ago. And, you know, I've known a couple of pet nutritionists and people have no clue. And now all the pet food companies are trying to catch up with the raw food and everybody's now offering raw food stuff. So it is really interesting to see. I mean, and I completely agree with you. Everybody should work together instead of try to reinvent the wheel. I see it on a daily basis. New pet experts popping up with no background, and I'm like, okay,
yeah,
you
yeah.
want to help them, let's work together, let's see how we can help you. Yeah,
big time. And I mean, especially what we're seeing a lot of in the city right now is a lot of people that are, you know, creating dog walking industries or dog walking businesses that aren't licensed, aren't insured, don't know about any of this kind of stuff, and it's just someone like, hey, I can make some spare cash, and, you know,
yeah.
in theory, yeah, that's awesome, until the dog gets hurt, the dog bites someone, dog breaks away from you, dog is sick, you know, or the 100,000 other things that no one ever puts into account.
Yeah, it's definitely true. I mean, people really don't, you know, I've always advised that hire a bonded insured pet sitter or dog walker that has a good, you know, reputation,
yeah.
knows what they're doing, is pet CPR and first aid certified, you know, knows how to handle different size dogs, different size animals, because there's some dog trainers out there that won't even work with certain breeds of dogs or certain size dogs.
Yeah.
That's just not their preference, which is fine. They can be a small dog trainer, and that's absolutely perfectly fine. But people, pet parents, need to do their research and understand who they're hiring.
Totally. Totally. And so, at least for Long Island, it sounds like it's like awesome, because people can contact you to find out, you know, who's legit and what's good and things like that, I'm assuming.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have, like I said, we have members all over the country now. So, and I've hosted events outside of Long Island and outside of the New York City area, in Chicago, New Jersey, Connecticut. We have a couple coming up in the Northeast, and
awesome.
I go to all the industry events to try to stay abreast of my, you know, myself and learning everything that's new and learning from experts that I'm not an expert in everything, and
yeah,
I
right?
have no problem in doing that, you know. And I love to point people to the right person, like, well, I can't do that, but let me help you and get you to the right person, because I love to see pet businesses prosper and do well. And You know, it's funny. I was listening to the commercial before we went on air, and it said something about restaurants and breweries. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
Yeah, so we have a really fun event coming up on May 20th and 21st. It is at the Greenport Harbor Brewing Company on the North Fork of Long Island, actually a Dock Dogs event. So there'll be dogs jumping in the air into the water and vendors, and it's going to benefit three different one rescue, one Canine Companions for Independence, and another local. And it's, we're really excited about it. It's going to be a lot of fun. So when I heard brewery, I'm like, oh, that's so funny. I have to mention that because it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that sounds great. And after the show, we'll chat, and I'll put it on the Animal Instinct page, because if anyone's heard it that lives out in Long Island, they're probably going to want to check it out.
Yeah, definitely. I would love that. Thank you. And I would love to know more about all of your pet nutrition background.
Oh, wow. That's a whole other ballgame. We'll talk about that. We'll grab a cup of coffee or something and talk about that. But yeah, I would love that. So one thing that I've found after being, you know, on the outskirts of the pet industry for years is that I think that the average Joe has no idea what the pet industry is like. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Absolutely. I agree with you on that. You know, when I first started and I would be at a networking event, and I would hand somebody my business card and they would say, oh, pet professionals, what is that? They would literally say to me, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is a pet professional? And I would say, well, you know, a dog trainer. And I would go through the whole thing. And then they would get it. And then I would start to explain to them how big the industry is, how much money, and inevitably the lawyer and the banker and would hand me their card, right, and say, I want to speak at your event. But it is true. A lot of people don't realize how massive the industry is. I think it's becoming more well-known.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, I just was at Global Pet Expo in March, and the trade show floor was 7.2 miles.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Crazy.
Wow.
So, like you said earlier, it's very overwhelming trying to stay abreast of everything that's new.
Yeah.
But that's, people don't realize that. And, you know, that's, like you said earlier, you know, there is a professional in any area of the industry, no matter what you're looking for these days. If you're looking for a pet bereavement specialist or somebody like yourself that does pet nutrition or a holistic vet or, you know, a retailer that only specializes in Made in the USA pet products, there is somebody that does it.
Totally.
And I love to see new ideas when they come to the industry. That always excites me when somebody comes up with something brand spanking new. I'm like, oh my God, that's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And it's like, when I used to go to this one friend of mine to all the trade shows, it's like, you know, we would comb the aisles. And she was doing animal nutrition a million years ago, too. And, you know, when some food companies started making stuff that was, you know, human grade, and this was such a big deal. And there's like one, like Honest Kitchen makes, you know, the best biscuits ever. And we'd stop by there because we were starving and like take samples of their blueberry cookies and be eating them. And people would look at us like we were out of our minds, you know. And now it's like, here, have one. And everyone's like, oh, don't mind if I do. You know, it's so funny how it's changed.
It's not as crazy anymore. I mean, it's really not. And, you know, I remember back when pet strollers first came out, and this is kind of funny, but I had a three-legged Doberman at the time. She had lost her leg to cancer, and I was walking her in the village where I lived at the time, and I thought it was somebody pushing a baby in a baby stroller. I had no idea until her two little dogs went completely ballistic and scared the heck out of me and out of my three-legged Doberman. And I'm like, there's something wrong with this picture. My dog has three legs and she's walking by. But you know what? Now it's such a normal thing to see dogs in a stroller. You know, our world is becoming way more tolerant and pet-friendly.
Yeah.
And that's a huge trend right now in the, not necessarily the pet industry, but like I mentioned before with the brewery having an event, a lot of more hotels are becoming more pet friendly. I'm actually shocked when I talk to a hotel and they say they're not pet friendly. I'm like, you have to catch up because your competition is crushing it with allowing pets.
Seriously.
So, you know, to some people, they don't necessarily like that everything is becoming more pet friendly. But at this point, there's no stopping it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, education and teaching people about, you know, how to approach a dog, or if there's a dog at an event that is not necessarily at a pet place, you know, the same thing, teaching your kids how to say hello and all of that is really important.
Kidding.
But you'll see dogs everywhere now. It's you know, almost shocking when you hear something's not pet friendly.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I remember the days of, like, I had a Jack Russell when I used to work with horses, and, you know, we'd have to smuggle our dogs into a hotel room, and, like, you know, our suitcase would start squirming or barking, and it's like, oh, what's that? I have no idea. You know, and now it's like, if you stay at the W, oh my God, your dog can get turned down service, and they cook
totally.
For them. I mean, like, I want to be a dog and stay at the W. That's like my life goal, basically.
It's the truth, though. I mean, I took my dog last May into, oh God, I can't even, I'm terrible. I can't remember this, the hotel, somewhere in New York City. And it was like this posh, funky hotel. It was really nice. They were so sweet. And they had water, Evian water and water bowls and a doggy mat and a thing on the door saying there was a dog inside.
Oh, nice.
Not disturb. A dog tag, just in case, if you wanted to put it on your dog, in case the dog got loose. Like,
wow.
they definitely rolled out the red carpet for him. And I was like, where's my Evian water?
Yeah, right? It's like, where's my dog tag? Thank you very much. But, I mean, it's
genius.
But
you know what? It's actually, I think hotels and people that are doing it are smart, because they are tapping into a market that is, you know, people will spend money on their pets.
Yeah,
and obviously are... I think it's estimated to be $100 million by 2020, so that's only a couple of years away.
Wow.
I'm sorry, $100 billion. Did I say with a B? Billion.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so it's bigger than the sporting goods. It's bigger than the candy market. Like, the market
Jesus.
That the pet industry is bigger is really incredible when you look at all the statistics and how fast it is growing. And it's not. It does not seem to be slowing down in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
I can attest to that. It's been a crazy few weeks just for... month, I should say, for me, work-wise, you know, but which I'm very grateful for. But
yeah.
It's really interesting to see, you know, that if you're not a pet-friendly establishment, it's something that you should really think about. And I know some people that are now training pet-friendly establishments to become pet-friendly.
Nice.
Starting a new business. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great idea. That's so smart.
Yep.
Wow.
If anybody listening wants that info, I can give
yes,
you.
Seriously. If you like to travel and stay in hotels, this would be the perfect job for you. That's really, really cool. Wow.
Yep.
Nancy, this is awesome. Well, we need to take a quick break for station identification. I'm talking to Nancy Hassel, the founder and president of American Pet Professionals. We'll be back in like a minute and a half.
I'm Mike Colomeco, host of Food Talk on Heritage Radio Network, and I'm here with Bob Moore, founder of Bob's Red Mill, as well as Ray and Tom Williams, who've worked with Bob for years and co-own an organic farm in eastern Oregon and Washington. Ray, Tom, why is organic farming so important to your family?
It's all a matter of the soil is a source of nutrients. You increase organic matter of the soil, you increase the water holding capacity. Water is becoming increasingly scarce. So in terms of sustainability, we don't think it's the only answer, but it's one answer, and it's the answer that we're trying to pursue.
It's been a challenge, and it's been fun, because it is different, and we're learning how to do it for the last 10-plus years.
We're not just doing organic, we're doing organic to high standards.
Bob, why did you choose to partner with Ray and Tom?
Oh, goodness. Well, because they're the best farmers in Oregon, and they're close, and they have a bunch of acres, I think about 10,000, over in eastern Oregon and Washington. They're wonderful farmers, and their family have been farmers over there for many, many years.
It's really important that you have long-term relationships, and we've enjoyed a long-term relationship with Bob's because there are a lot of challenges to organic farming. You simply don't have as many tools as a conventional farmer, and so you have to rely on longer-term solutions.
Knowing that you have a market is absolutely critical. The margins in farming are not that great, so if you grow the stuff and you can't sell it, you have a real problem. And we know with Bob's that we have a market, and we turn out high-quality grains, and they buy them, and it all works well.
Learn more about Bob's Red Mill and their commitment to good food for all at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
And we're back, talking to Nancy Hassel, the founder and president of American Pet Professionals. So, Nancy, what's it like doing PR for the pet industry, and how different is it for doing it for human beings?
Well, you're still dealing with human beings is the first thing. But I have to say that I feel like the pet, you know, most of my pet clients for PR are much more easy to work with, friendly, they get it, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've only had one or two over the years that were asking me when they could be on Oprah.
Oh, God.
You know, was on TV. But, you know, it's really actually a lot of fun. There's a lot of pet puns that you can use. But I have to say, though, you know, when I first started doing pet PR, it was for hospitality and restaurants and all that. But when I first started in PR in general, and then when mm-hmm. I started out on my own and I was doing pet PR, it was tough to get pet businesses in regular news. There wasn't as receptive, you know, as it is today. Now it's a lot different than it was, say, 10 years ago, sending out a press release about a really fun, cool pet event that's coming up mm-hmm. or something happening for a pet client or a new product. It definitely is more mainstream now than it was 10 years ago. So it is a lot of fun. It is still a ton of work. People have no idea how much work PR really is, but it's great. I mean, I'm friends with all the editors of the magazines. We love seeing each other at the shows. Yeah, it's definitely fun.
I mean, it's so funny because it's one of those jobs that people are like, oh my God, it must be so glamorous. And, you know, shoot to you, you know, pan to you at 3 a.m., like scrubbing a floor somewhere, you know? It's like,
oh,
yeah,
totally.
This is great.
It's not glamorous. But you know what? It's a lot of fun. And I work with a lot of other pet PR colleagues, like Dana Humphrey. She's a good friend of mine, and we run that show in New York City together. And I refer people to her that I'm like, I don't have a space for another client, or I have people in Chicago that we're all friends with. So we all work really well together.
Nice.
It's not as cutthroat as some other areas of PR can be.
Yeah, I'll bet. I mean, I love Dana. Dana's a bomb. Dana is my top three, definitely. She's awesome. And so what else do you do besides all this PR and American Pet Professionals?
Well, you know, everything kind of falls under American Pet Professionals, the PR. Mm-hmm. Every week I send out a pet events newsletter that goes out to over 10,000 people. That's
Holy
been going
cow.
Out for almost 9 years. Yeah, anything local to everywhere. I've had, you know, Hawaiian events listed, everything. And it's an interesting niche because I have pet parents on the you know, that have signed up for my list or for my newsletter over mm-hmm. the years, and as well as pet professionals. So there's both sides of it in the newsletter. I also have a American Blue Nose Terrier, a pit bull terrier named Cody, who is a lot of fun. He's a sweetheart. He was adopted. I adopted him about 2 years ago. And I also write for some of the trade magazines and some consumer magazines and, you know, try to keep abreast of that. And I also love all of the video and live streaming.
I mean, it's like, this is a thing about people that are successful in the pet industry. It's like, you guys don't need sleep. I mean, it's like, I swear to God, it's like you're like Aida Nevez, you know, who's the fashion designer.
Yes.
I mean, you guys just are like, go, 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 go. It's amazing to me.
I have to tell you, I wish I didn't have to sleep because I'm always like, ooh, that's a good idea. Ooh, I could do that. Sleep interrupts my creative process.
Don't you hate
that?
It's the worst.
Or if you go to sleep at night and then I'll wake up and I'll have like 10 ideas. I'm like, oh my God, I wish there was an on off switch at night for my brain sometimes. But
I hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? It is true. I mean, it is go, go, go. But if you really love what you're doing, it doesn't always feel like work.
Yeah.
You know, yes, it is a ton of work in certain aspects of it. But, you know, if you really love what you're doing, you're excited about it. And I've seen some new pet entrepreneurs come into the space that are really young. Mm-hmm. I actually know somebody that is about 14 years old.
Are you
and
kidding?
She does her, yeah,
Yay.
She does her, since she's 12, she's been doing her own video series and stuff like that. She was just honored in D.C.
Oh, my God.
She's just really, you know, I love to see that because when I was younger, you know, the only real outlet to look at in the pet industry was a veterinarian or dog trainer.
Yep.
And I thought I wanted to be a vet. And then when I found out what vets had to do, I was like, oh, I definitely don't want to be a vet.
Yeah, me too.
You know? Well, I mean, just some of the, you know, the surgery and any of that stuff, I really had no interest.
Yeah.
Some people would say to me, oh, you missed your calling. I'm like, no, I didn't. I did not want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then dog trainer, and there really was not a lot of good examples of women that were running successful pet businesses.
Yeah.
And now anybody that's younger that's thinking about it has, you know, thousands of people to look up to, if not millions of women that are, you know, doing it right now. Entering into the veterinary world is 75% women.
I saw that.
Staggering.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's so good. Do you find the same thing? I mean, this is something that's actually never crossed my mind. At the trade shows, do you think there are more women or men-owned companies?
You know, it's, well, men, women or men-owned companies. It's so funny because I just wrote an article talking about this, and I asked a few vendors that were there. Two were women, one was a man, and I said, what did you think that, you know, the attendance was? Because I felt like I was seeing more women in, you know, versus just the last few years. And one person said 70-30, 70% women. I was like, wow. Another person said 50-50, but most of them were, you know, that he saw were husband and wife retail store owners. But I really feel like there's a lot of women that, you know, it's definitely mixed, but there's definitely a lot more women in the industry than there ever was before.
That's really good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think about it. When you think about dog trainers, there's a lot of female dog trainers now as versus 15 years ago. You know, or any part of the industry could really say that. And I think that's really fantastic. And don't get me wrong, we love our men. I have a lot of male members from American Pet Professionals, you know, since the get-go. And I've watch them start and grow and really have a tremendous business as well. But it is an interesting statistic to see, you know, how many people are just going for it and quitting that job. And we had a vendor at our event last week. She still works full time, but she's doing every trade show and every consumer pet expo she can. She's got a fantastic, she's got so much energy. I'm like, holy crap. I'm like, how are you doing all this?
Seriously. I mean, seriously. I mean,
but that's our goal. She's, you know, I think she's going to retire. She's young, but she's probably like 20 years at her union job. So she's coming up on retirement in, I think, a few years. She's like, I want to be able to do this and, you know, be successful versus sitting around doing nothing, which is amazing.
Yeah, that really is. God, it's so wild. And it's, you know, because it's like thinking about like walking the walking trade floors. I think it's definitely, like last time I went, I think there are definitely more women exhibitors. But then in terms of vendors, you know, that was a much different thing. It was like there were basically there was a lot of men, especially like in the aquarium area, you know, in the reptiles, man kind of area, you know. And then like cute little dog clothing.
There's still a lot of men in the aquarium area, but, you know, or I used to work in trade shows and for both male and female, we would call them booth babes, who was going to attract all those buyers.
Totally.
Most of the booth babes in the pet industry are puppies, but that's
totally
crazy. I'm like, I really would. That's one thing that I think that a lot of pet businesses lack in is having something. And I've talked about this. I've done webinars on this. I've written about it. But, you know, in doing things at the trade show to attract people over to their booth. Actually, you mentioned, was it Honest Kitchen? I think it was Honest Kitchen. A couple of 2 years ago, it was on St. Patrick's Day. I'm pretty positive it was Honest Kitchen. And they had a St. Patrick's Day, basically a parade and band and bagpipers.
Oh, my God.
You could
God.
Hear them on the other side of the trade. And we, like, flocked down there.
Genius.
And they gave out, they were giving out beer and all. Everything was green. It was like St. Patty's Day in New York. And we had a great time. People stayed at their booth. People went into the other booths that maybe they didn't, you know, see.
Yeah.
They did have a band this year, too, but I don't remember, you know, it wasn't St. Patrick's Day, the same date. Mm-hmm. But it was really interesting, and I'm like, there's hundreds of people here. Maybe if you were doing some sort of event like that at your booth, you would have more traction versus just puppies.
Exactly.
Which we love the puppies because they're all rescues, but still.
Yeah, I mean, and it also depends, too, because, like, when those trade shows get crowded and you've got these poor puppies, it's like, oh, my God, more people, you know? So it's, you know, you've got to rotate them all and do that kind of thing, but...
Well, most of the rescue swap them out.
Yeah.
Like, they're only in there for a couple hours, and then they have, you know, they go and get others, and they do swap them out.
And that's one of the things that I've found by doing this show that I love. It's, like, most of the rescues, all the rescues I've talked to, because I vet everybody, but, like, from what I've seen is there's a huge, much... Rescue people have always been hyper-responsible. However, now I find it's even more so. And, like, the people that get into rescue, it's like their life is placing these animals. And so they're
absolutely.
Not going to stick them in a cage at a trade show and be like, I'll pick them up at 5. Like, that's not happening. You know?
Yeah,
be
no.
Like,
and they make sure they have, you know, if they have volunteers there, that the volunteers are well-versed.
Yeah.
There's only one or two dogs. and they're not there for the whole day. Yeah, absolutely. They really go above and beyond to make sure that they're well taken care of and safe and all that good stuff. You know, we have some pretty incredible rescue members of our organization who do just, they just blow me away with what they do, you know, helping dogs that are chained up and helping the families that maybe didn't know better, instead of being judgmental, providing food and veterinary care and teaching them what to do with the dog in the house. And, you know, sometimes it's cultural, you know, maybe that kind of thing. It's really, really amazing what some of the members do. And I'm just blown away by them on a daily basis when I see what they're posting or what they're telling me they're doing. Or, you know, I mean, I've been involved in rescue from the side. I've had my own rescues. I've helped. I've transported dogs, you know, stuff like that over the years. But I'm not in it on a daily basis like they are. And it's really incredible to see what they do.
Oh, I couldn't do it. I mean, hands down, there's no way possible I could do that. It's like, I would be the one that has like 250,000 cats or dogs.
you would be the hoarder.
I would be like the worst hoarder ever. And it's like, I mean, there's no way. And like, I have a couple of friends that have really nice rescues in the city. And it's just like the things that they see and the things that they, you know, like,
I know.
Emergency surgery, guess who's paying for it? You know, and that kind of thing. And so that's one of the reasons why most of these rescues are nonprofit, is because, like, and that's what I love too, is that they're so dedicated that they want the money to go back to these animals.
You know, absolutely.
It's like they could draw an obscene salary if they wanted to. And they're like, no, I'm going to take what I want to live. And the rest is going back. And it's like, you guys are amazing, you know?
Yeah, it's really incredible. I couldn't do it on a daily basis, but I do what I can, you know, when I can. So,
well, you've got your responsible pet program, so you're busy telling people how to take care of their pets, right?
Yeah, definitely. So I taught responsible dog ownership class for 5 years, right in the middle of the recession. It was a free program.
Nice.
We had some sponsors, but we also had, it was my program, but we had it done at the town of Islip and the town of Huntington.
Cool.
And then the last year that I did it, I hosted it in different locations all across Long Island. And we taught like 2,500 people on how to be a responsible dog owner. And honestly, really, I have been thinking about starting it again, you know, over the next couple of years, just because it's still needed. Somebody said to me once, well, how are you going to maintain that? I'm like, because people adopt dogs every day.
Yeah, right. Right. It's like,
you know, it's very hard for me sometimes walking my own dog. I have to bite my tongue and be like, oh.
That's the worst part. Oh, my God. That's the worst part. It's like.
But, you know, if you talk to people in a nice, respectable way.
Yeah.
You know, I used to say in my class, when I had people that would come in and they would find out information from me, from the volunteer veterinarians, from the volunteer dog trainers that we had in the class as well. It wasn't just me up there talking. I always made sure we had really good veterinarians and dog trainers. That, you know, some people would say to me after the class, they'd be upset. And I would say, listen, if you didn't know, you didn't know. You can't be upset at yourself.
That's
where you're here to learn. Ask questions. Don't be shy, you know. And now I feel like a lot of people just stay on social media instead of actually seeking out a professional to find out. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of great info out there, but again, there's a lot of
bad info in there too. That's the problem. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think if you ever have a question, you know, find a pet professional that's going to help you. If you're not sure about dog training, you know, interview a few dog trainers, and that's actually okay, you know. And most professional dog trainers are going to expect that.
Yeah.
You know, they're used to it, you know. Oh, and find somebody that's going to be right for you, your dog, and your situation.
No kidding, boy, because if not, it's going to be really awkward.
Yeah. but it's the truth, and some people get really upset. I know a good friend of mine, she's on her fifth dog trainer.
Wow.
And somebody made a comment, and I'm like, you know what? She's doing the best that she can do for her dog.
Yeah.
Because she's like, it's not like I didn't like the other dog trainers, but it's, you know, a lot of what they were doing or offering wasn't exactly what I needed. And now I said, you know what? You need to go to this person.
Yeah.
I think they're going to help. And her dog's doing amazing. And there was really nothing wrong with her dog. We just had small behavioral things that she had to train, and that was it.
And that's one of the things, too. I've had trainers on the show, and it's like, you know, you can wake up one morning and be like, ta-da, I'm a dog trainer, you know? And so, like, you got to do your homework, and, you know, there are dog training schools. And so if you see someone as a graduate of, you know, I don't know, Spots School of Fine Behavior, look up and see what Scott's School of Fine Behavior's theories are. Because, you know, if it's like, oh, we will teach your dog how to be a bloodthirsty guard dog, you know, you might not want that if you've got kids in the house, you know?
Yeah. like, and not all dogs are going to be like be that.
That's true.
Pit bull, and you know the bad connotation with the pit bull. He's the friendliest, happiest dog walking the planet. I swear to God. I mean, nothing fazes him. And somebody's like, "Oh, he's probably a good guard dog." I'm like, "No, I didn't know him. He's a good guard dog." But that was her breed. I'm like, pits are not good guard dogs. Mm-mm. I'm like, they are not. You know, they're most of them are happy-go-lucky, friendly. You might get one or two that'll bark at the door, but.
Yeah.
My dog doesn't even do that.
No, I mean, you want a good guard dog. It's the same thing as the people that are like, oh my God, Shih Tzus and Chihuahuas are so cute and so snuggly. I mean, the worst bites I've ever gotten in my life when I worked at a vet's office were Chihuahuas and Shih Tzus. I mean, like, I would be like, they'd bring in like an 80-pound angry dog and I'd be like, I'll take him. I'll hold him down.
Yep.
Like, no problem.
Yeah.
Don't give me the Chihuahua or the Shih Tzu, you know?
You know, it really is kind of sad because people put so many stereotypes on certain breeds of dogs, and you know, I always say each dog is an individual.
Yep.
Some dogs are going to have those breed traits. You know, like I would say a Jack Russell Terrier, they were bred to go to ground and go after vermin.
Yeah,
that's what they were bred for. You know, we used to have people in our responsible dog ownership class that say, I have a Jack Russell that's always digging to get out. I'm like, and then we would explain what the Jack Russell, I mean, these people didn't even know.
Yeah,
they had no idea that that's what the dog was originally bred for, or a beagle. You know, beagles, they get on a scent and they're gone.
Yeah,
go to any shelter right now and anywhere,
totally.
Anybody's listening and there's a beagle sitting there.
Absolutely. Without a question.
He got on a scent.
Without a question.
I mean, that's just the way it is, you know. So I would tell people that all the time. I would say, know your own dog's personality and their quirks, and then know the breed. I said, even if you have a mixed breed, so say you have a German Shepherd and a Lab or a Collie and this, know what those breeds things are, because you might actually say, oh, that's common in that breed, and they do that.
Yeah.
You know, so, but every dog is an individual, just like people are, and, you know, you still have to train them, be responsible, no dog body language.
Kidding.
Walking my own dog the other day, I saw a guy coming with a beautiful shepherd, and I happened to know just by watching the dog, and I moved over, put my dog in a sit. It was a busy side street, sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
And I could just tell by his dog, I'm like, oh, this isn't going to be good.
Oh,
his dog is going to lunge. And of course, his dog lunged over. My dog just sat there like, "What?" He does not care. He really doesn't care. He's just like, what? When are we walking? He doesn't care. And, you know, the guy really almost couldn't control his dog. I mean, he got pretty close to us. And I was like, and then as we passed, somebody said, oh, did Rin Tin Tin try to attack your dog? To my dog. I'm like, oh, my God. But, you know, his dog might have been in training. I'm not going to judge. I just watched the dog's body language. He did finally get him back under control. He looked young, so it could have just been, you know, the fact that his dog was training. And I think more people that understand that sometimes a dog is in training or sometimes a dog just doesn't want to say hello to you or say hello to your dog, you know, don't take it personally and understand that and be respectful. Because I think people are so quick to judge.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of silly when it comes down to it.
It's really funny because I took this whole long animal behavior course a while ago, and I learned, like, you know, basically the head of a pin's worth of information. However, it's like people pick dogs by breed, and it's usually like some nostalgic memory of like, well, we had a beagle when we were a child, and Snoopy was the best, you know. And so then they go get a beagle as an adult, and they're like, oh my God, this dog has so much energy and like is racing around like crazy and howls and does all these things, you know. And so, and cat people are like, I want a brown one, you know. And so, like, we don't even deal with breeds and cat breeds in this country, really, except for like the fancy show cats. And like the one thing that breaks my heart is living in Brooklyn and seeing people that have dogs like Australian sheepdogs or huskies or these dogs that require an extraordinarily huge amount of exercise, as well as really complicated problems for them to solve. You know, so it's like, just because you had it when you were a kid, like, there's all kinds of websites now, too, that some that are really good, where you can look up, like, what's your lifestyle? And why don't you, you know, find a dog that fits into your lifestyle instead of if you're sedentary and now you've got this dog that needs to go on a 10-mile run every day.
Yeah, you know, I would always tell people, you know, if there's a dog show near you, or a breed fancy club near you, and it's something that you're interested in, a certain breed, go and talk to the breeder, owner, handlers, because they're going to know and be able to tell you. And then the other thing is, a lot of dog trainers will actually offer helping you pick out a dog at a shelter. Mm-hmm. So you might go to the shelter and be nervous if the dogs are barking or just everybody feels bad for the shelter dogs.
Yeah.
I'm like, you have to understand to take them out of the shelter environment, out of the meet and greet room. Ask them if you can take the dog, you know, outside on the walk and see what the dog's like. Because, you know, dogs are completely different once they're out of the shelter. And so I always tell people that, you know, if you can find a dog trainer that will help you with that. I actually have a few members that have definitely matched and placed some, you know, one by going with the new dog owner or somebody that wanted to adopt a dog, but it was maybe their first dog and they really didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really, if you are a dog trainer and you're listening, it's not a service that you offer, you should think about offering that service because it's a really needed thing, in my opinion. In other words, don't go out and get a Belgian Malinois if you're just going to want to sit around and be, watching TV.
Or you have a 400 square foot apartment, you know, like
right.
Not a good choice.
Exactly, you know.
No,
don't go and get a working dog and never walk it. I mean, I just took my dog for a 3-mile walk before the interview because I needed the walk and he needed the outlet.
Yep.
And it's important. And I think people, you know, they don't realize that, how there's services out there that people will help them find the right dog, whether you're getting it from a really good breeder or you're going to an amazing rescue and rescuing a dog. I always push for people to rescue, but some people have their heart set on, you know, getting a purebred. So,
but even then, I would bring a trainer. Like, I think that idea is brilliant because there's so much micro body language in dogs and cats that, like, bring a trainer. Because they're going to tell you exactly what's going on. They might see cues that you're not seeing because they're just so used to working with that every day. This could save you
a lot
of problems.
When I adopted my dog, I saw him in the shelter and he was very calm. And I was having to be giving him out Christmas cookies. And it was a couple of days before Christmas. And I was like, in between dogs, my other older dog had passed away. So I felt like a fraud in the pet industry. I was 10 months without a pet. So,
I know, right? It's like a dirty secret.
But, you know, you had to find the right dog. You know, it wasn't looking for him. I just went to the shelter to give out treats and some supplies right before Christmas. And he was really cute, and I kept giving him treats. I'm like, don't tell the other dog. You know, he was very chill in the shelter. He wasn't barking. He was just sitting there wagging his tail, one ear sticking up,
aww,
eyes bugging out, you know, really cute. And I was like, oh, interesting. And so then I asked about him after Christmas. I said, is the dog, you know, still there? And they said, oh, yeah. And, you know, they didn't really have any information. He was a stray. Long story short, when I went to the meet and greet room, he was like, Marley and me. He was knocking stuff over, climbing up on things, stealing the toys out of the toy bin. He was crazy. And I was like, holy crap. I'm like, this dog is nuts. But then I was like, I said to the kennel attendant, do you have any treats? And she's like, yeah. So I wanted to see how quickly he was going to grab the treat.
Yeah.
If he was going to, you know, be excited, too excited over the treat. He is a food hound. But, would he pay attention to me? And so I took a squeaker toy then and I got him to sit, and that was the only thing he knew how to do, was to sit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I got him to sit, and then I said, okay, stay. And I backed up a couple of feet, and the kennel attendant was like, oh, my God, I can't believe he did, you know. And then I, you know, after like 20 minutes, I sat on the floor. He sat in my lap, and I was petting him, touching his feet. Now, these are things I would never recommend to do
if
you didn't know what you were doing.
No, because you could get bit pretty quick on the foot touching especially. But it's true.
Absolutely. But since, you know, I've been working with dogs my whole life, I just wanted to see what his reaction was. That's why I say it's really good to get a trainer to go with you if you're not sure, especially if you have another dog and you're looking to match
totally.
A dog. If you have a dog trainer over there with you, they're going to be paying attention to the dog. You're not.
Yeah.
You know, as much. So anyway, yeah, that was it. I mean, I was like, wow. I'm like, and then after a while, he calmed down, and he was just the happiest, sweetest dog.
Yay.
And I was just like, uh-oh, I think I want this dog.
Yeah, right. See how it happens? I mean, it's like the gateway drug, and then you're just dead, you know?
Yeah.
You know, pets forever. But they're awesome.
Exactly.
They're part of the family, so it's okay.
Absolutely.
Nancy, we are so out of time, and I'm so bummed out because I've loved this. I've been having so much fun talking to you. This has been great.
Me too. It's been wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Where can people find you if they want to check out you and get more information on all your groovy stuff?
Sure. So if they want to go to the website, it's AmericanPetProfessionals.com, AmericanPetProfessionals.com. And I'm on social media everywhere, Instagram, at American Pet Pros, the same for Twitter. We're on Facebook, all that good stuff.
Yay. So thank you again. I will definitely be in touch. I've got actually have a connection for you in Detroit that I think might be fantastic for you. She's doing animal education in the inner city, and it's going really great. So.
Oh, that's amazing. I would love that.
I'll be sending you a long email. Thank you. And to all the listeners, thank you for tuning in for the first episode of this season. I will be back next week with a new episode. And until then, take care.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization, driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.